Chapter 15. A Man and His Horse. "Where's Ginny?" Draco stood by the door and stared at it.
"She's away a lot. I can write to her if you'd like. It would probably be safe for her to visit."
"Yeah. Unless..." Potter rubbed the back of his neck. "We had this, thing in sixth year."
"I see.
It would be weird if that went anywhere and I forgot."
"I don't give a fig for your romantic exploits. Tell me your name, date of birth, etc."
"Wanker," Potter muttered, before continuing on with the examination. Draco didn't know if it was the legitimacy, or if the return of Potter's memories were gathering speed on their own accord, but Potter didn't leave his room, exercise, or talk to anyone for a month. The only person Potter would look at was Mother, and she advised everyone to keep their distance for the time being. She brought in lavender from the grounds and helped Potter sew them into tiny bags. Mother was wonderful at taking your mind off things. Then she'd sit and read whilst Potter slept, to ensure nobody disturbed him. Draco took Scorpius to Monaco for the last week of the holidays. They'd finally replaced Penelope Clearwater. And all too soon he was back at King's Cross for his son's second year at school. It stung, going back to enemies or arch-rivals or whatever they were. And Draco sent the trainee healers in his place to assess Harry. They didn't go to their garden, practice legitimacy, or even have a proper conversation in all those weeks, and it was like losing a friend. Still, with the extra free time, he could chase the private investigator, see Theo and Tracy in Prague, and even manage to go to a single-day symposium in Athens. It was a good thing he wasn't traipsing around after Potter, larking about like he didn't have a job to do. And it was a damn good thing he could devote more time to filling out paperwork and brushing his horses and walking his cat. Despite all this, Draco met the Weasleys in the visitors' tea room on the top floor after they called on Harry. "It was a long time ago, but you ran into us that year, and it wasn't exactly a holiday." "I'm not suggesting it was," Draco began, shoulders approaching his ears. "I'm not saying you were, it's just, you know, Fred died, Remus and Tonks. We saw Snape die too, that was traumatic."
Ronald grimaced. "And Hedwig, his owl. He never got another one, you know."
"We also saw the dead body of Professor Bagshot animated by a snake Horcrux. That was lovely."
"Not to mention Colin and Dobby."
"My elf," Draco said, nodding.
"Harry himself died," Hermione started.
"What?"
"You didn't know," Ronald said, frowning. Draco looked between them both, flummoxed.
"You should speak to him about it," Hermione suggested, "when he's ready."
"I will," Draco promised, "if he brings it up. How do you think he'll feel about the divorce?"
Ronald shared a look with his wife.
"Dunno," he said. "They're really good mates, not upset at all when they separated. But I wouldn't spring it on him or anything."
"Ginny would love to see him. Al too, whenever that's possible," Hermione said.
"He's a good lad, though," Ronald said. "He understands."
"Are you going to talk today?" Draco said, pulling up a chair.
"How long have you been fixing me?" Harry croaked.
Draco rubbed his eyes. "About 12 months.
"So, longer than the Vanishing Cabinet?"
He sighed.
"Longer than the Vanishing Cabinet."
Potter's gaze drifted around the room. At least he was wearing his spectacles today.
"It's cruel, you know," Potter said, "to not charm the windows to match the weather outside."
"I know. My boss won't fix them. I've already asked."
Draco took out a quill and rested his parchment on the bedside table. He wanted fresh essay questions this year for the new trainees.
"Don't feel like you have to talk unless you want to. I've got loads to do anyway."
Potter nodded. 20 minutes later, Potter said, "I remember the summer after Voldemort died.
Snatches of it. It was shit."
"It was," he agreed.
"What are you doing?"
"I came up with new essay questions, and now I'm writing a quiz for tomorrow."
"Oh yeah, for your teaching seminar every Wednesday."
Draco's lips twitched.
"Well remembered."
"What else have you got on?" he asked, nodding to the pile of paperwork.
"Let's see."
Draco leafed through the parchment.
"A note from my secretary reminding me that the deposits for the Christmas party are due on the 12th. No, thank you. A request from my boss for ideas in publicising the dangers of Nogtail hunts. He enjoys pretending to care about my opinions. And applications for the trainee healer positions next year."
How many will you take on?
Up to 6, but usually 4. We only take the best.
Nice one. I can see why they picked you. You're good at your job.
Draco eyed him bemusedly. I've not healed you yet, though.
You will.
Draco took the week off and went back to the Czech Republic. In the bars and lights of Prague, Draco couldn't stop thinking about Harry. What was he doing? Would Harry like Prague? Had he started any fires? Upon Draco's return, Harry's face lit up as though Christmas had come early. He knew Harry wanted him. And Draco's response was like the night bus. One flick of his hand and Draco was there, by his side. Several weeks passed before Potter suggested legitimacy again. By implicit agreement, they returned to practicing twice weekly. Potter didn't behave inappropriately again. Really, the whole ordeal was probably because Potter was a man who hadn't been touched in Merlin knew how long. Draco did not speculate whether that applied to himself. And then he was back in Harry's mind. A gang of children were chasing a young boy. A dozen students were practicing the Patronus charm. A woman was screaming. Then there was a surge of green light. Harry was tracing Draco's lips, feeling intense desire and tenderness. Draco's first cousin once removed was singing, "God rest ye merry hippogriffs," at the top of his voice. The next thing he knew, they were both breathing heavily in the chairs of the consulting room.
"Good," Draco said. "You pushed me out."
"Yes, yes, I did."
Potter nodded and looked relieved at the conversation starter.
"Once more, then."
Draco pushed in with no further preamble and saw Potter jogging through a park. Harry was dueling someone in his aura robes. Harry was sitting in the dark next to his future wife with 100 muggles, staring up at moving images on a screen. Draco pulled out of his mind and Potter wasn't even trying to occlude him.
"Try it on me without the incantation this time."
Potter's mind pushed and Draco squeezed his eyes shut.
"Gentler. Try again, but take more care."
"Sorry," Potter muttered.
This time their minds brushed together and Harry slipped in. And all at once images raced through his mind. He was 16, crouching in a broom shed, arms around his knees, wishing he had someone to talk to. He was 14, eyes damp, as his father cast the killing curse on his dying horse. He was 8, leaving flowers on his grandmother's grave. He was 22, pressing his forehead to the sheets as Astoria breathed her last breath. He was 26, cradling Scorpius on his lap, who was desperately trying to stay awake for the birth of the kittens. He was 17, shakily pointing his wand at Luna and Ollivander. He was 30, staring at Harry tending a barbecue, topless at the World Cup.
"I think that's quite enough for now," Draco said, chest heaving.
They looked at each other for a moment.
"Who was she?" Potter whispered.
"Did she look familiar?"
Potter screwed up her face.
"Don't think so."
"She will," Draco said with a nod. "Won't be long now."
"Am I getting better? At legitimacy?"
"Marginally. You need to knock at the door rather than smash it down. It's supposed to be not only painless, but undetectable. And your occlumency is still requiring practice."
"Bloody rubbish, you mean?"
He pulled Draco to his feet. Harry fancied him. There was no denying it.
It didn't come as a horrendous revelation, or even an unwelcome one. And Draco would have to dwell on that later whilst alone in bed.
"Shall we go up to the roof?" Harry suggested. He didn't respond for a while, so Potter said, "It's a nice day," nodding to the window. Draco rolled his eyes.
"It's overcast today. I'll get you a cloak."
Potter beamed.
"But I must spend at least another hour on paperwork and get something to eat."
"I'll nick you some extra chips."
The dinner menu was in a 14-day rotation, and today was sausage, eggs and chips with Arctic roulade. Draco pulled a face.
"The food is appalling. I can bring you something from our kitchens."
"No, it's fine."
2 hours later found them shivering around a fire. Their feast comprised of a pile of cold chips, a packet of nicotine-free cigarettes, 2 butter beers, a package of duck with buttered black turnips, and a side of mandarin, chicken liver parfait, and grilled bread. All Draco could think about was the memory of Harry brushing his fingertips over Draco's face, how badly Draco had wanted him back, and the unbearable thought that he'd seen it twice.
there was only so much a man could take. Draco had an unusual 2 days off in a row, and his mother was avoiding him at home. She didn't like to talk about work. She said gossiping was uncouth, but really Draco knew she wanted to relax and forget for a time. He knew something awful must have happened to Potter, but as Draco had rarely spoken to him once they'd left school, there was a good decade of knowledge he didn't have about Potter. It unnerved Draco that he didn't know what was coming around the corner. Draco found his cat Blue, with her beady eyes on the Japanese koi in the pond. A thick, invisible barrier repelled her, so he picked her up and carried her into the orangery. "I might go riding," he told her. He composed a letter to his son, made his grandfather a pot of tea — he was snoring next to the wireless — and he pretended he didn't hear Father calling out for him as he walked down the passageway. Once Draco was out riding Butter, he didn't need to think. There was something magical about doing such a muggle activity. Rippling muscles between his thighs, a near soulmate bond with his favourite horse. The giant took him through acres of woodlands, along paths forged by long-remembered wonder. The early November air was crisp, and the chill burnt his nostrils. Out here he could forget all about Potter and his woes, Madame Campbell and her non-improvement, the Longbottoms and the legitimacy memories, the baby he helped delivered who wasn't looking well when he handed it over to the night assistants, the half-finished mortality report still on his desk, the dire applicants for the next intake of trainee healers, how he'd forgotten to visit Stonehenge last week on Halloween. Out here it didn't matter. He was just a man and his horse. The following afternoon, however, he was face to face with Potter, who was back to judging him as a piece of shit. "What is it now?" Draco asked. "I don't want to see you." Potter hadn't got out of bed today. "Fine." The next day, Potter had done a record number of hanging sit-ups, torn up 100 Sudoku puzzles, and snapped at his mother. "What the hell is wrong with you?" Draco snarled. "What the hell is wrong with you?" Potter cried. "How's your wife?" Draco's blood chilled in his veins. His lip curled. "I have no wife." "Liar. I remember her. You... Potter faltered at the look on his face. "So sure, are we, that you know what's going on in the year of 2012? Draco asked, twisting his lips. "Go on. Please tell me more about my life, who I am and what I deserve." Potter opened his mouth to speak, but Draco carried on. "You think I'm an awful death eater who waits for life to be handed over to him on a plate, but you know all I do is work myself to the bone. You have no idea how often I sleep in my office, that I have 400 outpatients and 23 inpatients under my care. No, it's all about you. Most people kiss the feet of the chosen one, but I am certainly not afraid of offending the great Harry Potter. Well, guess what? You don't know a thing. Far be it from me to assume you're anything other than a clueless child, and I..." Draco stepped back at Potter's stricken face and passed his fingers through his hair. "You can punch me if you like," Potter suggested. He remembered who he was, when it was, his position. But it wasn't 1997. "You make me behave like such an asshole," Draco spat. "This is your fault." Potter looked sorry for him, which pissed Draco off even more. "What happened? You broke up?" "My wife is dead." He asked Potter the year, where they were, checked his eyes and heart, wrote in his healing records, and left without another word. Potter didn't stop him. "Sorry," Potter mumbled the next day. "Tell me the year, where we are, etc. I'm sorry, I didn't know." Draco clenched his jaw. "You saw her? In my memories?" "Yeah," he whispered. "She looked like she was sleeping." Draco shook his head, staring at the healing records. "She had been dying for years. It was a long time ago." He felt Potter's hand on his arm. "You're too young to be a..." Draco looked him directly in the eyes. "Widower. Say it." "I'm sorry you're a widower. That's awful." Draco twisted his lips. "Awful is my middle name." Potter flinched. "Let's go outside." "Can't." Draco shook his head. "I've ordered someone's fingers to be regrown in the laboratory and I need to reattach them. The world does not revolve around you and you alone, Potter."
16. Non-declarative memory.
Harry clambered off the pull-up bar from which he was doing hanging sit-ups.
Hi.
Oh, God. Hating Potter was simpler when he had short hair and a skinny frame. His t-shirt was far too tight. But recognising that he was distressingly attractive was not a crime. Just objective fact. Draco postponed his mental breakdown and found his tongue.
You're chirpy today.
Are you all right? You've gone a bit red.
It's very warm in here.
No, it isn't, Potter said.
Isn't it November?
I've just come in from outside.
Oh.
Harry sat down and gulped a glass of water. I saw Ginny just after lunch.
Draco looked at him for a while, trying to read his face.
You need a bath, he said, then feigned checking the labels of the potions.
You're so horrible, Harry said with a laugh.
He sniffed his armpit and nodded reluctantly.
Horrible in spending my free time feeding you cakes in my secret roof garden, Draco said, nose back in the potion cabinet.
So, how was she?
It was nice seeing her. She was acting strangely, though.
It seems she doesn't like Narcissa much.
It's like my life is a film and everyone knows the ending.
Is that yet another muggle cultural reference?
Yeah.
You are a wizard. You'd do well to remember that. Who you are.
Are you always interrupting your patients?
No, you brute, Draco said, turning to face him. You're a special case.
How did she get in? She's not on the approved list.
Dunno. Ginny's a good mate. She should be allowed in.
Is Luna on the list?
The last I heard, she's in Mongolia looking at plants or whatever. You ought to write to her.
Draco passed his wand over to Harry, who tidied the ward, cleaned the window and organised his sock drawer.
You're getting good at household charms, Draco said.
Thanks. Hermione's been teaching me. She thinks I'm getting the hang of it quickly because something deep inside me remembers.
Draco would like to be deep inside him, too. He cleared his throat and stood.
Non-declarative memory.
Yeah.
Harry handed the wand back. You've got a night shift tonight, I suppose, so you'll be off tomorrow.
Draco felt tingly all over that Harry remembered. God, he needed to get a grip.
He got out his pocket watch.
Yes, I am the duty healer from 4 o'clock.
Till 4 in the morning.
Harry pursed his lips in sympathy.
Sounds rough. Does that mean I'll get Robertson tomorrow?
Probably. I'll see you in a few days, then.
See you.
Draco went straight up to the staff quarters to have a slow, private shower. When Draco was back at his desk on Wednesday, his mother came to find him.
Is everything all right? He asked. Is it Potter? What's happened?
She poured herself a glass of pumpkin juice from the dumb waiter and sat down.
At long last, she said, Harry remembers his engagement.
Draco held his chin high and stared at the crackling flames dancing in the fire.
He's been put to sleep, she said. He's angry again.
Draco nodded, brow furrowed.
How have his mornings been?
He feels about 13 or 15 in the mornings, she replied.
That's good. He'll probably be completely better within a year.
How are his afternoons?
He's perhaps 18 in the afternoons, so remembering Weasley before lunchtime is good progress.
He curled his lip. She let herself in the other day.
That woman is not on the approved list, Mother said, appalled. She's jeopardising your hard work.
And yours, he added with a nod. He wasn't distressed afterwards, though. Not really. I don't think she told him much.
Mother made a face as though she'd smelt something sour.
You think she was wrong to leave him? Draco stated. My parents raised me to believe that marriage endured until death. We must pity those who have not been taught right and wrong.
Draco tried to imagine Ginny Potter kissing Harry and holding his hand and taking him home, and he just couldn't agree. Savagely, Draco was looking forward to telling him that she'd left him.
We'll tell Harry his dear wife dumped him when he remembers his son.
Dear Albus, Mother said with a sigh, he is such a sweet companion for Scorpius, whom I long to see.
It's not long now to the holidays. He wants to see a concert in Coventry with his friends. I suppose they can stay at the manor and take the flu.
Such sweet boys, Mother said, and it's good for your father to have guests in the home.
Your grandfather misses you. Draco hated speaking with his grandfather. I'll pop in on him tonight. He wasn't in a terrific mood when he visited Potter early that evening.
You remembered your wife, Draco said without preamble.
Yeah, Harry whispered. Where is she?
Your marital problems are none of my concern.
Sod off, then. Draco examined his fingernails.
I am professionally obliged to listen to you. I need to see her.
You already have.
Why isn't she on the approved list?
Draco leant against the door and just stared at him.
Please, Potter said. Tell me.
Draco looked between his desperate eyes and knew he couldn't keep the truth from him any longer.
You're divorced.
That's a lie. Draco's heart cleaved in two.
It was mutual. She tells me you were living as friends rather than man and wife for some years. She's living with her boyfriend now and is very happy.
But our vows?
Draco's lip curled. Clearly they're less valuable to you than you once thought.
Potter buried his face in his hands.
Everything is so fucked up, he mumbled.
Getting out his pocket watch, Draco said, Arthur Weasley is arriving soon. You should get dressed.
Then he left.
That night, he levitated his grandfather's wheeled chair to the balcony overlooking his favourite pianoforte in the West Wing. He played some of grandfather's old favourites, Debussy, Fauré, Saint-Saëns, and pretended he was alone. He wondered what music Potter would have wanted him to play, the uncultured fool. The following evening, he could no longer put off seeing Potter. He dragged Potter up to the roof where the air was rich with the sweet, dewy petrichor of the post-rain afternoon. The sky was grey and unkind.
What fun, Draco said. I've got pessimistic Potter today.
I've gained and lost a wife. Have a little compassion, Potter snapped. Even so, Harry accepted the chocolate frog, snapped it in two and gave the greater half to Draco.
Oh, boo-hoo. She claims you're still the best of friends, so I don't know what you're complaining about. Draco said, waving a cigarette. Ask me one of your silly questions.
Potter sighed. Don't want to. He swallowed the chocolate before replying.
Just fucking do it.
Why?
I'm not sitting out here for my health, Draco said. And don't speak whilst you eat. It's revolting.
Harry stole his cigarette, and Draco couldn't be bothered to fight him.
If I died, how would I be remembered? Harry asked.
He sighed.
Everyone will be wondering where you were, because naturally I've drowned you in the ocean for being the most annoying person I've ever met. There won't be a body at your funeral, of course, because I've no desire to be implicated and sent to prison. I will instead live out my days on a beach. Perhaps Brazil.
You've given this a worrying amount of thought. Draco smiled. How little he knew.
You wouldn't cope in Brazil, Harry declared. Why aren't you in your normal robes today?
Conjuring a few more floating candles, Draco said.
It's wear your ugliest robes to work day today, and I don't own any ugly robes, so I had to wear my old ones.
Harry looked him up and down, examining the lime green uniform that almost every other healer wore.
Fair enough, he allowed. You do look better in emerald green.
Everyone looks better in emerald green. These are vulgar.
Is that why you got a promotion?
One motivating factor, yes.
Never let it be said that Slytherins aren't ambitious.
Harry got out his parchment and started on his questions.
What's something that people can go on and on about, but you just can't sit through it?
Bewitched in Shoreditch.
That's an amazing programme.
Draco held up a hand and looked away.
Please, don't. It's so dull. And everyone is so addicted to it. Sometimes I wish there was more than one wireless network.
You could try the Muggle radio.
That's the worst idea I've ever heard. Go throw yourself off the roof, Draco commanded, pointing with his cigarette.
Potter stole it and took a drag. You're such a wanker.
Yeah, I know.
Christmas lights look nice.
They do.
Draco lent him his wand so he could practice magic, but they didn't stay out long in the frigid air. Now that Harry had 2/3 of his life back, he'd probably be gone within a year. A couple of weeks later, Potter asked to practice legilimency again. He was still rubbish at it, but they did make progress in other areas.
I have a son, Potter said, his face a picture of wonder.
You do, he replied. Do you remember him properly, or are you just joining the dots? Potter covered his face with his hands. I remember him. How old is he?
His head shot up.
Is he safe?
He sprang to his feet. Tell me he's all right.
Calm down, Draco ordered. Sit and speak rationally, and only then will I tell you.
Potter sank into a seat. Albus. His name is Albus.
Your son is 12.
Draco beamed and added, he is safely ensconced in the Slytherin dungeons.
What? You must be honoured. The greatest wizards of our age are in Slytherin.
Draco grinned at him as Harry threw his head back to laugh. I have a son. He's in Slytherin.
I don't believe it.
And yet, it feels true. In my mind.
Right. I'm going to tell you two true things and two false. I want you to identify them.
Go on, then.
Let me think of something safe, Draco said. All right. Your son is proficient at the pianoforte. He plays Chaser. He has a clean sweep XIX. He attends the Charms Club.
Potter repeated the phrases back to himself, savouring the words on his tongue. It's the last two. He's got a great broom, and he's in Charms Club.
Correct.
Draco was mildly impressed.
Try me again. It's like remembering.
Albus isn't my best friend. I'm not armed with various facts, Draco said.
Let's see. He likes Nocktail soup. His eyes are brown. His best friend is Mariah Courtstone. He supports the Chadley Cannons.
Potter pulled a face and repeated the phrases to himself. He likes the soup and the cannons. God, they still crap nowadays.
They are.
Draco stretched his legs out.
Poor parenting, allowing him to get so emotionally invested in the worst team in the league. You're setting him up for failure.
Nocktails? What the fuck are they?
We have them in the grounds at the manor. Nasty creatures.
Poor parenting.
Yeah. I've just been sat here for over a year. Does he need me? Is he all right?
He seems fine, but you ought to write to him.
Draco rummaged around in the desk for parchment and ink. I can forward on letters for you.
What should I say? Potter asked, taking the parrot quill.
You can inquire after his health and his marks and his subjects. Find out how Slytherin are doing at Quidditch. Tell him what you've had for breakfast. And you can invite him to visit at Christmas. It's not as if you're dying, so I don't see why he should have to miss his lessons.
Fuck, Harry swore softly. I'm a dad.
For what it's worth, you aren't too bad at it.
You have a son too, Potter said 2 weeks later. He's the boy I saw in your memories. I remember my godson trying to play tea rooms with our boys.
Such a weird child.
It was only 7, but the end of November was freezing and he was so tired.
Wow, you had kids young.
Yeah, you too. They're the same age.
He chewed on his lower lip before continuing.
The healers told Astoria she couldn't have children, so we didn't bother with the nasty tasting potions.
He snorted mirthlessly.
Astoria fell pregnant in her final year of school.
Shit. Bet that went down well.
Though his eyes were closed, he could feel Harry's gaze on him.
We had a brief engagement. Our parents were displeased.
You must miss her.
She had been dying for several years, and she's been gone for many more. One could say that I've had time to make my peace with it.
Harry nicked his wand and conjured some bluebell flames. He was sitting in one of Draco's old winter cloaks, his breath fogging white tendrils in front of his face, framed by the silver fox hood.
When do we get married? Harry asked.
We are not married. I got married in 1999, as did you, 13 years ago. Our boys were born in the year 2000.
Crikey, we didn't waste any time.
We did not have a child.
Yeah, I know. What kind of name is Scorpius, anyway?
At least I don't name my children after schoolmasters.
Draco ran a hand over his face before adding,
keep on resolving to be a less petty person, but you always get on my nerves. You make everything so difficult.
Harry nudged Draco's shoulder with his own. No hard feelings. Then Harry gently rested his head on Draco's shoulder. Draco stiffened, eyes wide. He cleared his throat and did nothing, waiting. Nobody spoke. so he lowered his head on top of Potter's, and he could see that Potter had stopped breathing, for there was no more mist. They sat like statues for a few seconds. "So," Harry began, "how's fatherhood?" Draco squeezed his eyes shut and smiled a tiny smile.
"Terrifying."
"Is it? Why?"
"I don't want to fuck him up. He's so perfect."
"Ah, yes, the Malfoy ego."
"It's not ego. It's fact."
Draco remembered being the most tired he'd ever felt when his son was a baby, who refused to sleep unless Scorpius was on his or Astoria's chest. Sleep. His eyes were heavy. He was so comfortable in front of the flames, body flushed next to Harry's, cheek resting on the fur hood. Sometime later, Draco felt a hand on his face.
"Draco,"
someone whispered.
"Hmm?"
He gave a jaw-cracking yawn, disorientated to find Harry's face so near his own.
"You nodded off."
He swore.
"How long was I?"
"Not long. But I didn't want you to freeze or anyone to come looking for us."
"Us."
There was no us.
"Come on,"
Draco said through another yawn. Once downstairs, Harry tugged him into his ward. "You need to warm up," he said. "Can't go home like that."
"Right."
Boots kicked off. They sat at opposite ends of the bed, legs not touching under the duvet. Harry scooped the bluebell flames out of a conjured jar, and the room glowed by the light of the floating candles.
"Did we see much of each other after school?"
Harry asked.
"Your feet are freezing. Stop jabbing me with them."
Draco forgot to breathe when Harry rested a hand on Draco's feet. God, he was so pathetic.
Draco began, collecting his wits. "We have mutual friends at the Ministry. Have run into each other once or twice at events. I've never seen you at a Quidditch match. We must support different teams. Our sons are inseparable. When Scorpius and I went to the Quidditch World Cup, you invited us to a barbecue there. And that's it."
"I did?
What do we talk about?"
"Nothing of great import." "You must be a big part of my life still."
Draco's stomach squirmed.
"We haven't spoken in years."
"Our boys are best friends."
He waved his hand dismissively. "They don't need written permission to have sleepovers. They just arrive, joined at the hip."
"Scorpius is a good lad."
"Good parenting, some would say."
"Some would."
They looked at each other for a long moment. Harry's eyes sparkled. The moment dragged on and on.
"I should go," Draco whispered. He didn't reply, and watched Draco put on his boots and travelling cloak.
Harry even walked him to the door, his tongue wetting his lower lip.
"Good night, then," Harry said.
"Good night, Potter."
Chapter 17. Mistletoe. On the first day of the Christmas holidays, Albus and Ginevra visited the hospital. Draco booked the day off so he wouldn't accidentally punch her in the face.
"How was it?" Draco asked.
"Lumos. Look to the left."
"Weird.
Al asked me if I was getting better, and I told him I poured boiling water in my breakfast cereal this morning."
"Good. Look to the right," Draco murmured.
"He reassured me I was a bit scatty before as well. I reckon he's a bit of a joker."
Potter followed Draco's finger and Draco wrote in the healing records.
"Then, as soon as Ginny's back was turned, Al asked me if I could have a cat and said, Mum said it was fine, which I didn't buy for a minute. Sneaky one, isn't he? Bet he learnt that behaviour off Scorpius."
Before Draco could butt in, Potter continued. "Anyway, I told him I was making no parental decisions. Told me all about his friends, how my godson's coming to visit me soon. Then Ginny came for a chat and it was really awkward. Did you know she was shagging some Quidditch player?"
Draco pressed the stethophone to Potter's back. He smelt nice.
"Breathe in and out," he said. "And again."
"Yes, I did.
It's so weird. On one hand, I remember being happily married to her. But I just can't imagine us at all long term. Know what I mean?"
"Yeah, well, you are divorced. There is a reason for that."
Potter crossed his legs and rested his chin on his hand. Always thought I'd meet someone, fall in love, become an aura, get married, have three kids and a house. Be with someone who would care about me forever. But instead I've been locked up in here for a year. My wife isn't my wife anymore. My son is a stranger who is weirdly similar to me. I've no wand. Presumably I've lost my job. I've got no house, and it could be months till I'm normal. Unless someone tries to do me in again. That about right? Not succinct, but essentially correct, yeah. Want to go upstairs? Potter plastered a smile on his face, but Draco wasn't convinced. Yeah, should we try legitimacy again soon? I think it might be working. Ever the optimist. Draco smiled. All right. Over the course of the next two legitimacy sessions, it became apparent that Potter actually fancied him. Draco pretended he didn't see the memory of Harry looking at him when Draco's back was turned, the vision overlaid with romantic interest. But Draco couldn't ignore the tender look in his eyes when once again Draco pushed him out after a disturbing memory from 1998. "You okay?" Potter murmured, rubbing Draco's arms. He didn't shake him off and felt his face soften. "Yes," he said hoarsely. "You?" Potter nodded. "I'm fine."
"Good."
Potter was not 6 inches from his face. His gaze flickered down to Draco's lips, and the room was very hot.
"I should get back to work."
Draco ran a hand through his hair and made towards the door. He halted at the threshold, staring at a sprig of mistletoe.
"I'll see you again after dinner."
Harry's gaze drew up to the mistletoe as well. "Okay," he said, eyes not leaving the sprig. Draco fled. Approving the healing records for the Longbottoms and Mr. Wilkes helped refocus Draco's mind on rational matters. Therefore, he was his normal, composed self when he took Potter to see the Christmas lights. "Go on, ask one of your questions then." Draco passed him some of his salt-baked beetroot, pickled carrots and toasted pumpkin seeds.
"I've just had dinner. You're like a bottomless pit."
Potter nodded, considering.
"True."
After swallowing a mouthful, he asked, "What's your favourite piece of clothing?" Draco smirked.
"That cloak you're wearing. It costs 300 galleons.
Potter's eyes bugged out of his face.
"You're joking." "I assure you I'm not. It wouldn't be an amusing joke." "Yeah, well, sometimes you say I'm gullible, and I didn't know if it was one of those times. My cloak is indeed very expensive," Draco said. "You'd do well to treat it nicely."
"Wow. Thank you.
For letting me wear your cloak that costs more than my wardrobe combined." "I can tell. You dress like a blind man. For instance, what possessed you to wear that jumper under my fine cloak? And why is it slug-coloured?" "Oi, let's not turn this into a slanging match."
Draco let Potter conjure a large bowl of bluebell flames and they sat beside it, knees knocking. "When was the last time you climbed a tree?" Harry asked. Draco laughed and shook his head.
"I've never done such a thing."
"What?"
"I said nothing confusing. I'm not sure I lost you."
"That's mad."
"I'm not a monkey. I was not raised to climb trees.
I have, however, ridden my horse around a tree. Does that count?"
"No. No, it doesn't," Harry declared.
They finished the savoury food, then Potter nicked the raspberry and lemon petit four.
"So uncouth," Draco said.
"I'm halving it," he protested. "That's the smaller half," Draco accused, pointing at his portion.
"No, it isn't." "You're right, it isn't. I just wanted to argue with you."
Harry took Draco's wand and conjured tiny lights of ruby, violet and blue. Sometimes he just liked to hold the wand, to feel the power coursing through him. Today his tanned skin glowed with the jewelled lights. Draco racked his brains to break the silence, and was about to mention Christmas when Harry asked, "What would be your first question after waking up from being cryogenically frozen for 100 years?
"Cryo what?"
"Frozen in time. Muggles can do that," Draco asked, mystified.
"No, not yet. Just in stories. But muggles can do a lot."
"Merlin? Better watch out.
Like ants. Not too bad until you sit on them."
Potter wrinkled his nose.
"Well," Draco said, "to answer your question, if I woke up in 100 years, my first question would be, where the hell is Potter? Because I want to kill him. For he is surely responsible for sending me into the future, and I want his bollocks for breakfast."
Potter snorted. "It's always my bloody fault, isn't it?"
"Yes."
"Fine, you think of a question then.
This is your game. Just do it." "What's the best way to start your day?" Potter shrugged. I don't know. This is why I don't ask the questions. You're so ineloquent, it's painful. I suppose I'd put the kettle on, have a wee, eat breakfast, go to work. Draco rolled his eyes. How the famous live? I don't get that question. Isn't that what everyone does? No. Draco lit two cigarettes and passed one to Potter. I rise, have a decaf espresso, shave, bathe, smoke a lovely nicotine-free cigarette whilst I style my hair, have a slice of watermelon, then let in some fresh air and make sure the cat has been fed. How many days do you think you spent styling your hair, if you added it all up? I do not care and do not want to know. Draco looked him up and down. I wouldn't expect you to understand hairstyling. Potter just grinned into the flames, then stretched. One arm went behind Draco on the bench. How do you relax after a day at work? Potter asked. Draco tapped the ash off his fag into the flames and stared resolutely ahead. He gave a roguish half-smile. That's private. You know what I mean. He leant back ever so slightly so that he was resting against Harry's arm. Draco continued on to push through the thick air between them. If I've got bodily fluids on my person, I have a bath. If I don't, I have a mint tea and a crumpet. Or I'll play the pianoforte and check on the horses. Draco waved a hand. There's always something to do at the manor. Can you keep a secret? Harry gave him his full attention, and Draco continued to stare into the dancing flames. Of course, he replied. Draco watched the smoke rising from the cigarette between his fingers. My grandfather. You won't tell anybody? No, Harry whispered. He caught dragonpox when I was 9. It's highly contagious, and the older you get, the more likely you are to die. The infection spread to his brain and spine, and the healers sent him to the manor to die, as was his last wish. Too much riffraff in here. Draco rolled his eyes. We held a funeral in the small chapel. His gravestone is next to my grandfather's, but he's not dead. Draco couldn't find any judgment in Harry's eyes. He can't walk, of course, he continued, nor does he know who I am. But sometimes after I get home from work, we have a cup of tea and complain about things together. And I wanted to answer your question fully about my routine. Thank you for telling me. I like the sound of it. When Draco was younger, he'd get upset when he didn't get what he wanted. Once upon a time, he'd wanted Potter as a friend and had been bitterly disappointed. Now he wanted him as a lover. Life was so unfair. I also thought that if you ever came to visit... Well, I shouldn't want you to be shocked if you met him. Oh, Harry said softly. Right, of course. Ask me a question, then, Draco demanded. Harry looked as though he didn't want to change the subject, but gracefully conceded. Where do you see yourself in 10 years' time? Merlin, I don't know. I'm already head of the department. By then I'll be 42, and Scorpius will be 22, which doesn't bear thinking about. But I've always dreamt of moving to Paris, of starting again. Potter met his gaze. Oh, Paris is far away. It is, he replied softly. Draco looked down at his knees. We should go. I'm cold. 2 weeks later, Harry was despondent at the prospect of spending 2 Christmases in a row at St. Mungo's. Would you like to go outside tomorrow? To some gardens? Harry's eyes lit up. Could I? You'd do that? His shoulders tensed. I'm not in the habit of lying to people. My Malfoy wouldn't, Potter said, shaking his head. He flicked through the purple notebook to check. You're... he spluttered. You do not have a Malfoy. You know what I mean. Let me check my notes. Yeah, well, mention the offer to anybody and I'll deny everything. Draco sat in the visitor's chair. Memory bad again, then? Potter nodded grimly. It's funny. I can remember us hanging out, you know, on the roof. I can remember my son. I can also remember you docking us a load of points in the Inquisitorial squad like it was yesterday. Draco wrinkled his nose. You're right. It's a bad idea. Spend the day in this room. No, I want to go. Too hard to sneak you out. And the worst idea I've ever had. Potter sat up straight, mischief glinting in his eyes. He leaned in close and dropped his voice. I've got an invisibility cloak. Folding his arms, Draco sat back and shook his head. I don't want to know how. Be ready after lunch and some robes. Don't make me regret this. Tell anyone, and you're dead. I look like a git. They are my robes, Potter. They are valuable. If you disrespect them, I shall take them back. He looked Potter up and down. You look respectable. Potter scowled in the looking glass. I look like a twat. Perhaps ice blue isn't your colour. Are these dragons? He asked, tugging at the sleeve. Chinese brocade, Potter. Look it up. What's the weather like outside? It's not too bad in London, but this morning in Wiltshire we had our first frost and it's bitterly cold. Where are we going? My home. Draco took off his own travelling cloak and draped it over Potter's shoulders. Here. Thanks. Draco traced his fingertips over the silver-tipped fur edging the black wool. This magnificent cloak is wasted on you. It's really nice. Potter grinned. Thank you. Draco raised an eyebrow and handed him the invisibility cloak. Say nothing. Follow me. In the passageway, they passed Wulfric, who winked and hovered by the door. Draco acknowledged the portraits, but didn't run into anyone on the way downstairs. He usually used the flu network, but led Potter to the apparition point around the corner from the Welcome Witch's desk. No one was watching. Draco held out his hand and Potter grasped it, then embraced him. And Draco apparated them to the wrought iron gates at the foot of the drive. He released Potter, relieved he hadn't splinched them both. Potter was a dreadful distraction. The iron contorted, twisting itself out of the abstract furls and into a frightening face which spoke in a clanging, echoing voice. State your purpose. I am Draco Malfoy. The face melted back into the shape and the gates swung open. The high hedges muffled their footsteps, and they were soon at the broad stone steps. Once they were inside, he told Potter it was safe enough to take off the cloak. He became visible in all his glory. That is a marvellous cloak indeed, Draco said through a lump in his throat. Potter grinned at him, delighted to be out of hospital for the first time in over a year. Draco led him through the drawing room, and Potter gazed open-mouthed at the crystal chandelier, waved at a few portraits who inclined their heads at them both, and trailed his fingertips along the grand marble fireplace. We don't sit in here, Draco explained. It's frightfully cold at this time of year. They went through the grand hallways, cut through the deserted courtyard and the garden parlour, and into the grounds. One of my father's owls, Wilbur, Draco said, pointing. How many does he have? God knows. Do you ride? What? Are you able to ride? What, a bike? No, Draco said. A horse? Of course not. What do you take me for? I'm trying not to judge a spellbook by its cover. Do give me some credit. Is anyone home today? How long can you bunk off work? Father takes to his bed for most of the day. Grandfather will be in his rooms. Mother is visiting my aunt. And I don't call this bunking off. It's therapy. What's that? Potter asked, pointing at the stable guardian. A Mughal jeweled falcon, to prevent horse theft. What are the stones? Is that gold? Potter peered at it, then leapt back when the bird cocked its head. Draco laughed at him. Rubies, emeralds, sapphires and onyx, amongst others, he said. Eleutheria, he told the bird. Its beak opened wide, deeper than should be possible, to reveal a tiny golden key. Draco scooped it up and creaked open the door. The stables were freezing, but the space was bright from the skylights. What sort are they? Potter asked. Butter is a Dutch draft horse. Peggy's an Andalusian. And Giles is a Frisian. The horses blinked at them, and Potter rubbed Giles's glossy black face and cooed, Hello. Take off my lovely cloak and robes and put these on. Draco threw him some riding robes and turned to face the corner whilst he stripped off himself. Don't you dare get my things dirty. Why are you a healer? Harry called. That bird must be worth a million. You obviously don't need the cash. Who else would look after you? Draco saddled Butter and led him out. Potter reached out a finger to stroke his grey face. It's massive. Oh, don't let his size put you off. Draco clapped Butter on the flank. He's just a big lazy potato. He gave Potter a leg up and clambered on behind him. Potter was only slightly shorter than him, and his stupid, nice-smelling hair was getting up Draco's nose. They trotted past the family cemetery, disturbing a murder of crows, and Draco laughed that Potter's ability to identify bird calls was limited to seagull and
Not Seagull. At the heart of the valley lay a clearing where the ancient oaks gave way to an acre of grassland. The sheep kept the grass trimmed, and none of them paid the wizards any mind. Accio Brum, Draco cast, and the door of the shed in the corner of the clearing flung open. He caught the broomstick and held it out to Potter. Go on, then. Potter took the broom, but his eyes didn't leave Draco's face. It's what you've been nagging me all year for, isn't it? Draco asked. Don't tell me now that we've finally got here you don't want to fly. You aren't joining me. Draco hadn't flown out here since the summer before sixth year. No, I'll stay with Butter. He scratched the horse's chin and keep an eye on you. Don't go far. Potter grinned, mounted the thunderclap delight, and shot off into the sky. In the split second before Potter became a dot in the distance, he saw joy light up his face like a firecracker, and then Draco turned to bury his face in Butter's neck. Winding his fingers into the mane, he breathed in a lungful of air. The big, docile horse under his hand calmed his breathing. For all his incessant whining, Potter didn't stay in the air for long. Finish trying to break your neck? Draco banished the broom back to the shed. You're worse than Wales. I think I saw that match. Draco helped Potter up and climbed up behind him. They chatted about the World Cup with broad smiles on their faces, and Draco knew that today was a very good day, for Potter remembered 2007. Are there any muggles nearby? Potter asked. The muggle repelling charms run out about 15 acres away. I nearly hit a helicopter once. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. No, don't believe you. Draco sniffed. When they got back to the stables, Draco hooked his hand into the strap of the brush and showed Potter what to do. You don't come across as someone who does this kind of job themselves. But you back into it, Draco said as Harry groomed Giles. You think me some sort of lazy brute. Draco stroked Butter's soft nose. They don't like ourselves, and Father said we'd eat them if I didn't take proper care of them. He said what? He may have been joking, Draco called, as he fetched the fly-repelling potion. But when it comes to my father, I prefer not to put him to the test. He threw it to Potter, who caught it. They grinned at each other. Sounds wise, Potter said.
Grow old with me, let us share.
To 18. The Hall of Forgotten Things. New healers traditionally covered the worst shifts for their first year, and healer Mo Ganbari was only too happy to oblige. Anne press-ganged Draco into taking off the 2 weeks of Christmas and New Year, and Draco grudgingly conceded that Mo was an excellent replacement for Penny Clearwater. On the last day before Draco's holiday, Anne brought in fish and chips. I've passed healer Ganbari your patient list, and I think Mrs. Jones will be fine. She said helpfully. I had my dream interpreted. Marvellous. A generous Christmas present and a daily hot chocolate were how he showed his appreciation to Anne, whom he could not live without. On Christmas Day, he unwrapped his gift from Anne. It was de-alcoholised wine. Potter was his only addiction. And Draco thought of him, what he might be doing. Was he still smiling? Would he have enough visitors? Since Potter's visit to the manor, he'd had a grin on his face every day. Whenever Draco popped in, Christmas cassettes would be playing, or he'd be listening to the European Cup on the WWN. Portkey to Your Heart was on the wireless when Draco went in to see Harry after the new year. Hello, stranger, Potter said. His ward was dark, and most of the light came from the candle suspended in crystal bubbles. His hair cascaded down his back, wet from the shower. Oh, God. Good afternoon. How was Christmas? He just grinned and held up. Why I Didn't Die When the Augury Cried, Healing Horizons, An Anthology of 18th Century Rare Healing Cases, Holistic Hypotheses in Healing, and Healing with Hindsight. Nice, Draco said. He sat down and helped himself to a miniature chocolate bauble. These must be for you. Hermione probably didn't want to be rude and get them for you outright. He couldn't tell Potter how much his mother mourned Auntie Bella at the holidays, how that now she was dead nobody danced at Christmas anymore. But Potter noticed the look in his eyes and didn't ask him about his time off. Al tells me Scorpius got 2 fishing rods for Christmas, and he's desperate to go to Wiltshire, Harry said. I blame you. Draco smiled at the floor. I want him to be happy. It's not too much to ask. Do you...
He broke off and shook his head. Never mind. What? Nothing. No, what were you going to say? Use resiliency. Work it out.
Draco took a few seconds to break down his occlumency shield to let Potter in. Potter drew out of his mind and grinned.
Really? I could sneak you out about every 6 weeks without it being too suspicious. Tell anyone and I'll never speak to you again.
Our secret, then?
Yes, Draco said softly.
This time they explored some of the more interesting spaces in the manor. Harry trailed his fingertips over the magnificent wrought iron banisters, a copy of those at Chantilly Castle. He introduced Harry to Astoria, Howard Potter and Rosanna Northcott near Black.
There's something else I want to show you, Draco said, pulling him into the games room.
He wiped a drop of blood on a nondescript oak panel, and a door shimmered into existence. The torches burst into flame as Draco ducked inside, his footsteps echoing. The candelabra on a spindly table beside the door lit itself, and he passed it to Potter. The room was gloomy, with countless glass cabinets rising to the ceiling. Threadbare flying carpets and ancient tapestries hung from one wall, large cobwebs stretching between them, and the air was musty.
Wow, Potter breathed.
The best secrets hide in the most unlikely places. He kept a watchful eye as Potter approached the grand pentagonal fish tank on its cast-iron stand. It had bronze herons, intricate scrollwork and carved flowers, and the five raised plant stands with accompanying candles dripped wax onto the leaves below. Draco warned, "Don't get too near. Don't know what's living in it still." Harry held up the candelabra to the alabaster Egyptian boat and said, "It's like a museum. What is this place?"
"The Hall of Forgotten Things. I wasn't allowed to enter until I was 16, and my father couldn't until he was 21 and had proven himself of a sensible mind. Grandfather was very strict."
Harry wandered to a glass cabinet, his candles illuminating the framed first drawing of the moon by Galileo and the original telescope. The one in Florence was a copy, alongside a notebook belonging to da Vinci. This room wasn't designed for nosy guests, so no plaques labelled any of the treasures.
"What the fuck?"
Potter whispered, as he stared, lips parted, at the carved Tibetan skulls that were 350 years old. They lay beside the Death Mask collection. Draco didn't know to whom they belonged.
"Is that what I think it is?" he asked, pointing to another cabinet.
"Yes, a crocodile foot scabbard. The three dagger blades are crystal."
"That glove looks creepy.
If you hold it in your hand, it spins towards that which you most desire."
Draco pointed out the taxidermied sphinx curled next to the armour that once belonged to a Muggle earl.
"There's quite a bit of non-magic stuff in here."
"The armour was gifted to the family. Before the statute, my ancestors had diverse connections."
Harry squatted down to stare at the stuffed beast.
"I met a sphinx once."
"Did you really? Where?"
"Triwizard tournament."
Potter wandered over to examine an Aztec skull covered in jade and turquoise mosaic.
"That one's cursed. Stay back," Draco said. "Look at this."
He tugged off a dust sheet from the great glass tank to reveal a pickled shark.
"Whoa, this is insane."
Its great form loomed out of the darkness.
"How old is it?"
"My great-great-grandmother liked experimenting on animals." They roamed through the hall, largely keeping to the cabinets. Harry was drawn to the great lapis lazuli and bronze vase gleaming in the candlelight. He reached out a finger, but Draco caught it.
"Careful," he warned.
"What is it?"
"It's beautiful."
"Do you see those runes at the bottom?"
"Yeah."
"It's rumoured that if you drink the water in the vase, it'll relieve aches and pains. But it could also kill those who are not pure of heart. You're better off keeping your distance."
Somehow they were now holding hands. Draco's heart fluttered with jolts of energy.
Harry traced a warm thumb over the back of his hand.
"Draco, have you taken other patients here before?"
Draco had lost the art of speech. Harry stepped forwards, and he was so close Draco could feel his breath ghosting across his lips.
"I think you already know the answer to that question," he murmured.
Draco reluctantly dropped his hand.
"I'm a healer. I don't seduce my patients."
"Discharge me then.
You know I can't do that either," Draco said.
Harry opened his mouth to say something more, but shut it again and nodded.
"Come on then, let's take one of your horses out for a walk."
They left the house, crunching through the snow,
and Draco let out a breath he didn't realise he had been holding in. Draco? He dragged his eyes away from his correspondence to see Anne hovering by the door. Good morning. Everything all right? Thanks for the hot chocolate. The Welcome Witch says Mrs. Potter is downstairs and she's insistent on speaking with you. He looked at the clock. Tell her to make an appointment. I did. She wouldn't leave. Threatened to hex me. Says it's urgent. About Harry Potter. Draco tutted. Send her up. When Weasley arrived, he didn't look up from his paperwork. Don't you dare threaten my colleagues ever again. She said you had a 12-week waiting list. I do, Draco said. So be quick. Weasley sat in the chair and twisted an umbrella in her hands, the February rain sprinkling over the carpet. Jenny, my friend at the Ministry, told me that the Guardianship Committee is applying for Harry to become a ward of court because he failed a mental stability risk assessment. His mouth went dry. Mental stability risk assessment? He repeated. How did the Ministry... He broke off at the look on her face. My testimony from your divorce proceedings. She said I should talk to you about it. Sounds bad. Do you know what that means? Draco frowned at her. Yeah, he said slowly. I learnt about it during my training. It's a law that hasn't been used for a very long time. There was a knock and Anne poked her head round the door, wincing. Draco, your 9 o'clock's here. Right. Draco pinched the bridge of his nose before scribbling a name and a message on a slip of parchment. I have to go. Take this and be discreet. He handed it to her. Give this to Marcus Forley. He's a legislator in the Wizengmot, friend of the family. He'll tell you everything you need to know. Let me know straight away what he says. She came back the following lunchtime. Please give me good news, Draco said, finishing off his lemon posset. Just so you know, I'm the duty healer today, so may get called away in an emergency. Fine. Her voice was strained and she looked sick. I spoke to your legal friend. A long time ago, a wizard with brain damage ran amok with a wand. Exploded some shops, burnt down some workhouses. So to protect the Statute of Secrecy Act, the Wizengamot formed the Guardianship Committee. I don't like where this is going. If the committee thinks there's a low likelihood of medium-term recovery, they declare you incompetent and you become a ward of court. Then they snap your wand. Draco swore. I know, Weasley said. They're saying Harry might meet the criteria, as he's failing the mental stability part. So, in essence, it wouldn't look good for the government if our ex-head aura is going berserk in front of muggles. Yeah, she croaked. And he'll never be able to leave, Draco said hollowly. That cannot be correct. For the love of Godric, this is a hospital, not a prison of the Ministry. He seems happy in here, though, and not dangerous at all. But will he always be? He could live for 100 years, he said, or more, and never be allowed to leave. Draco checked his pocket watch. He had to go. He's improving, though, remembering more each week. He could be completely recovered in a few months, she said. Mr. Forley thinks you said in court he might not ever get better. He might not, Draco said simply, throwing up his hands. I have no idea. Nobody does. Weasley looked at him with an unfathomable expression. I couldn't lie, Draco shouted. And this would never have happened had you not turned your back on him. You blame me? Weasley asked, tears streaming down her face. He ran a hand over his face. I have to go. I've got a patient waiting. His patients were a welcome distraction. There was no space to think about laws, captivity or snapped wands. He just had examinations, spells and potions to administer and clinic letters to compose. Draco beckoned Potter and snuck him up to the roof garden early that evening. Even though it was 2 degrees outside and too cloudy to see the moon, Potter never refused an opportunity to see the heavens. Draco didn't want to ruin Potter's buoyant mood, so didn't tell him the news. They leant on the railing, watching car lights vanishing in the distance like twinkling rubies, then observed the muggles in their minuscule flats and guessed their occupations. "Do you ever wonder what things would have been like," Harry asked, "if you'd never got your letter? It could have been a window cleaner like him." "He's not a window cleaner." "He might be," Potter said. "He might be," Draco conceded. "From the age of 10, I'd check the Daily Prophet first thing every morning. Certain some sort of tragedy would have befallen it. Certain that I wouldn't get to go." "It must have been so exciting. Knowing about it all, looking forward to Hogwarts. I wish I'd had that head start you had." "Everyone loved you," Draco scoffed.
And you didn't even have parents. You didn't know any magic or how to behave. And it was so easy for you, people loved you anyway. As soon as your ass touched that broom, Saint Dumbledore...
He stopped at the feel of an arm around his shoulders and allowed Harry to lead him to the bench.
"What's wrong?" Harry asked.
Draco shook his head and pressed his eyes with the heels of his hands. Little stars erupted in his vision.
Potter sat down on the bench beside him and Draco knew he was staring at him. He thought about making up an excuse. After all, Rutherford's patient died. The clinic overran by an hour, and Mr. Croker's wanted to know why they have so many long-stay patients. It was bloody marvellous, and he wished he could wake up this morning and do it all over again. Instead, he said, "Nothing. Just a bad day."
Harry rummaged around in Draco's pocket to steal his wand and conjured a bowl of hot blue flames.
"Good idea," he said, rubbing his hands together. "Question time," Harry announced.
Draco groaned.
"If you could suddenly become a brilliant carpenter, what'd be the first thing you'd make?"
He appreciated that Harry was trying to make him laugh.
"A coffin. For me. For you," he said with a nod. "Wanker.
You can tell me what happened today, if you want."
"It does concern you."
Draco looked at the way the blue flames cast lively reflections on Harry's spectacles. "I've learnt patience, being stuck here, and in other ways, you know." Draco did know. He explained everything Ginevra told him this afternoon.
Harry seemed remarkably uncaring and said, "I'll stay here with you, I suppose." "The novelty would wear off eventually," he replied. "You're taking this news very well. I thought that you would have been outraged."
Harry pursed his lips.
"Ginny would have told Hermione. They're probably going to kidnap me or change the law." "I'm Harry Potter," he said with a shrug. "They can't snap my wand."
Draco nodded.
"You're right."
He let out a sigh and huddled nearer. Their legs brushed together, and they warmed their hands by the flames.
"How long have I been here?" Harry asked.
16 months.
"Be honest with me. Have we kissed?"
Draco froze, lips parted, and blinked.
No. That would be inappropriate. "Sorry, I know my memory is dodgy, so..." "Another reason as to why it would be inappropriate."
Neither of them made to move. Their legs were still touching, their gazes fixed upon the fire.
"Yeah, so, we should probably change the subject, talk about something else. That would be a good idea. Yeah." "Someone had better be dying, Weasley."
"It's Potter."
"What?"
"My last name. It's Potter. Whatever," he said. "I don't want to see you. It's your job to help people. I swear to Merlin, to help patients.
You are not my patient."
"It's about Harry," she said.
Draco ignored her and continued rummaging through his drawers. He knew he'd seen that mortality report in here somewhere.
"Please. I visited him. He didn't seem thrilled to see me."
"I have no sympathy whatsoever," Draco said. "You've ruined his life. Well done. Quite an accomplishment."
She ignored the barb. "He seems happier in general, though," Ginevra continued.
"Compared to when?"
"I haven't seen him this happy in a very, very long time. Must be because he can't remember our marriage," she said bitterly. "When all this is over, I hope you stick around. It would crush him if you never spoke to him again."
"When all this is over."
It was what they were working towards, but he just couldn't picture it. Harry Potter, alive and well, reunited with his wand.
No doubt he'd go back to work and never see Draco again until the next time he got attacked in the line of duty. Potter would hardly start coming around for afternoon tea.
"I wrote a letter for him," Ginevra said, putting a scroll on the desk. Draco didn't answer.
He hoped she was leaving when she got up.
"The first day I met you," Ginny said, staring at the photograph of their son stuck to the notice board,
"was in Flourish and Blotts. Do you remember?"
"No. Harry gave me the only first-hand school books I've ever had."
"How thrilling. What a wonderful man."
"You were so nasty to him."
"And nothing has changed, really, has it?" she asked coolly. "Get out."
"Your dad ruined my life. I was 11, she hissed. Draco stood.
Dilys Derwent snored softly in her frame. "And I hated him for putting Voldemort in my school bag, but have I ever hated you?"
"I don't give a fig. Harry likes you, and I have to trust you because of your healer's oath. But don't fuck this up. Don't fuck him up."
Draco pressed the tip of his wand to the underside of his desk so Anne could rescue him.
"Draco!" Anne cried, bursting in. "You are urgently needed downstairs. Goodbye."
he said to Weasley. Later, Draco read the letter before giving it to Potter. Dear Harry, we met properly again before Christmas and you were really happy to see me. You're in a shitty mood today, though, and I thought, as your memory is bad, I should write down what happened between us in case you forget. I realise that it may seem like I've given up on our marriage. We got married really young and had a wonderful son. We were 19. We became romantically distant and everything was shit for a while. When Al was 5, we got marriage counselling and Mum would mind Al whilst we went out on dates every week. It was bloody awkward. We both felt the same way, that our marriage had run its course. We agreed to divorce in a few years once Al was settled at school. We got on so much better as friends that lived together. And then we had a lot of laughs, good times, nice holidays. I don't regret any of it. Then I met Oliver. He coaches the junior league. You're friendly with him, and we always said that when I was at Hogwarts, I'd spend a few nights a week at Ollie's cottage in Dorset. Anyway, this all went to shit when you had your accident. Al didn't know we were splitting up, but I've sat him down and told him because it could be years or never until you're back to your old self. I hope you understand. It's obviously not your fault, but parenting without you has been really hard. I'm really sorry, Harry. I'm horrified that you're hurt because you can't remember the decisions that we made together. It's been horrible not seeing you for an entire year. I popped in once or twice under the cloak to check you were doing okay. Sometimes I was seconds away from hexing everyone to bits and visiting you anyway, but I was scared that I'd make everything worse. You're one of my closest friends and I love you to bits. You can always count on me to be your friend when you're ready for it. Take care and don't let the Malfoys get you down. With love, Ginny. Draco dropped in on him later that day.
What's wrong? He asked at the look on Potter's face.
Nodded off. Had a bad dream. Potter hadn't eaten his dinner.
Did you write it in your dream diary?
He nodded.
May I see?
Draco asked. He nodded again. Last night I dreamt that I was at the bottom of a valley.
The trees were speaking to me and they sounded like people I know who have died.
There was blood on the leaves. I could hear piano music and followed the sounds. There was this road paved with pearls and I walked along. Then I realised I was naked, not wearing any shoes, and there were angels crying. Then everyone disappeared, and the pearls turned into crushed blackberries and I woke up.
What do you think it means? Harry asked.
It mightn't mean anything.
I never believed in divination.
Me neither.
I'll send up some dreamless sleep tonight, if you like.
Draco turned to leave, but then Potter said, I spoke to Ginny. They peered at the same patch of wall. She asked if I fancied you. Didn't think it was a good idea. Draco said nothing. Because she thinks you're straight, he continued. Draco's lips quirked. I always thought that she was a stupid woman. Good day.
Chapter 19. Draco's Sexuality.
Paperwork arrived from the Ministry, and thanks to Ginevra, Draco was expecting it. The Guardianship Committee were coming to collect Potter's wand. They wanted a report with an updated prognosis, the extent to which Potter needed to be watched if he ever went outside again, the extent to which he remembered spells of protection, and his ability to discern risk. The Ministry had set the court date for 3 months' time, but required the documentation in 6 weeks. The private investigator had found a few leads, but they were all dead ends. They tracked down the descendants of that art restoration place Dillis had visited all those years ago. Draco looked through 200 pages of interviews with portraits just in case, even though the summary concluded that the investigation had been unsuccessful. Draco now had over a year of healing records to pass through, and the photograph debacle to downplay. Again, he skipped the dream journal entries that said things like, when I'm dying, I'll want my heaven to look like today, but whilst I'm alive, I'd like tomorrow to be different. Draco had to be honest in the report. He was cautiously optimistic and concluded that if Potter continued at his current trajectory, and nobody cursed him or sent him malicious communications, he'd be back to his annoying self by autumn or winter. About a month later, Ronald wrote requesting a meeting. Draco went up to see him in the visitor's tea room after his ward round.
All right, Ronald asked.
At that moment, Neville and Augusta Longbottom walked by, and Neville clapped Draco on the shoulder. Nice to see you both,
Good afternoon, Draco said. Good to see you taking a break, Healer Malfoy, Mrs. Longbottom said over her shoulder. Ronald raised his eyebrows and dropped a sugar cube into his coffee. Didn't know you were chummy with Neville. I'll have you know that Longbottom and I are cordial. Weasley didn't need to know that Mrs. Longbottom ignored him for his first 2 years as a trainee healer. So, Draco began, what do you want? Harry seems to be doing well. He says there's a couple of months till that ministry hearing. Yeah. Draco wondered where this was going. Ronald leant forwards on his elbows. He says you're a dickhead, but he trusts you. Draco looked around to check that the tea room was deserted, then nodded as if this was a fair judgment. What do you expect me to say? I'm a lovely person out to kill him. Look, I know we don't know each other very well, but as Harry's friend, I've got to find out what your intentions are towards him. Explain. To be frank, you do what's in your own best interests. So why are you helping Harry like this? I'm a healer. I work in the best interests of my patients. Ronald cocked his head to the side. Don't you think you're going a bit above and beyond? It might be that what's best for him is what is best for me. Draco crushed his fingers into a fist and straightened them out again. They had no right to know, no right. But you hated Harry. Draco barely knew himself, hadn't ever had cause to put into words how he felt about Potter. He couldn't explain why he was skirting the line, or was dangerously close to throwing everything away on a man who sometimes didn't even know who he was. One thing was certain, though. I do not hate Harry. You like him, then? Draco dragged his eyes away from Ronald's coffee cup and met his gaze. Not quite love at first sight. Ronald's eyebrows crept up towards his receding hairline. Love at 10,000th sight. Yeah, well, let's not quibble over the specifics. There was a pregnant pause where they just looked at each other. Then Ronald rubbed his face and said, just take care of him. Make sure he's okay. That's my fucking job, Draco hissed. It's all I ever do. Don't be so defensive, he said, getting up. Ronald downed the last of his coffee. We're all on the same side. See you then. The Easter holidays were not exactly relaxing. The hospital had never been so busy. There'd been another stampede at a Celestina Warbeck concert, then a spate of muggle attacks that had them recovering from sprouting antlers before their memories were wiped, and a woman who'd spilt shrinking solution in her ear. The trainee healers had never had so much hands-on experience. Malcolm Devine seemed close to a nervous collapse, and he wasn't the only one. 3 babies born this morning, Hannah Abbott called across the secretarial office at no one in particular. I don't think I can take this anymore. What are they playing at? Submit a business case for another healer then, Rutherford said, frowning at his paperwork. But nobody had as much to do as Draco. At least he'd finished Potter's report early. He was usually last to leave the office at night, first to arrive at the hospital the next morning. He had shadows under his eyes and seemed constantly close to breaking something. Out of solidarity, Pansy and Daphne looked through the private investigator's files and, when they were all occasionally met up, would discuss who they thought sent Potter the box of photographs. They were so absorbed in helping they even forgot to be rude about Potter and his gang. Draco, meanwhile, had to fit in as much paperwork as he could before going on holiday. He'd booked off half of Easter to spend time with his son, but he wouldn't leave before attending to the pile of prescription requests and every last scrap of correspondence. On the final day before his holiday, Mother brought Scorpius to play the pianoforte at the bottom of the stairwell. Draco was lucky enough to catch snatches of the music between his rounds. In the dark months after Astoria's death, only his son and his job kept him sane, his chin held high. Draco wanted his son to succeed where he failed, to make his own decisions and never to accept second best, and to have confidence in things he ought to, like his angelic music. He spoke to Harry that night. He was remembering more and more each day, and was excited to spend next week with Albus and various Weasleys. Leaving him was hard. A few days into his break, Draco sat up late in the drawing room. He loosely held holistic hypotheses in healing whilst he thought about Harry. Even though they were a week into April, it was 4 degrees outside and the fire crackled merrily in the grate. Father was having one of his more lucid days. Still, Draco preferred to sit as far away as he could to avoid the smell of the spiced wine. Your mother says you are not talking of France any longer. It wasn't a question. Oh, Draco said, eyes fixed on the rug. "Shall you remain here, then?" Father's hands shook around his glass. "I hadn't given it much thought," Draco replied. "I haven't seen Astora for a long time." "She died."
Father gawked. Draco got up and left. He'd long got over the injustice of losing his father to Azkaban. Just 5 years and a stint of potions abuse was enough to send him round the twist. The man who'd once taken him to gather chestnuts for roasting at Christmas was long gone, lost to the elixir to induce euphoria. Draco ignored the call of his grandfather and the whining of his cat, and let his feet take him wherever. In the grounds, his robes whipped out behind him and the trees bowed in deference to the wind. After the war, he'd seen family friend after family friend carted off to Azkaban. The Malfoys were considered lucky that father had only got 5 years in exchange for names. The dismantling of the only world Draco had ever known was disquieting. When Astoria fell ill, Draco had disappeared from society. There were no tea parties, no balls, few invitations, and in all honesty, he found himself wishing he wasn't a Malfoy, that his past could be erased. But his horses didn't know. They just knew his voice and blinked awake at the sight of the oil lamp floating behind him. "Good evening, my darling," he said to Peggy, who was nearest the door. In the corner sat the apple-summoning bucket, and he tapped it thrice with his wand to get some snacks from the kitchens. Soon everyone stood munching, tails swishing. And Merlin, it was so easy to make them happy. His knuckles were white on the stable door, and Giles shuffled up to put his noble head beside Draco's. Draco wrapped his arms around the horse's glossy head and told Giles what he could not tell Harry. "Comb your hair," he told Scorpius. His son just rolled his eyes and hugged him. "As your parent," Draco began, a smile on his face, "I am socially obligated to guide you through your formative years." "Shut up, father," he replied with a laugh. "Will you find time in your schedule to write to me?" "Second year is much harder than first year," Scorpius told him seriously. "And what with the end of your exams coming up?" He bit his lip. "I'll have to see what I can do." Draco tried and failed to keep a straight face. "I'll have to choose my extra subject soon. Ted said he'd show me the ropes for arithmancy, but it looks jolly difficult." The doorbell rang. "That must be Grandmama. Must dash. Don't want to be late for the train." Scorpius gave him another quick hug and left. "Be good," Draco called after him. Later that morning, Hela Smethwick pulled Draco out of a teaching seminar on vampire cravings. "Really, Draco, Mr. Potter's not doing very well at all today," he said sadly. "Panicked he hasn't got a wand. He's always whining about that," Draco said, striding down the stairs two at a time. "What else is new?" "He thinks you're a Death Eater trying to kill him. His memories are very muddled today, very muddled indeed. He's not sure who anyone is. I didn't think it wise to put him to sleep, so I gave him a heavy, calming draught, but he really ought to be reviewed. I'll deal with it. Please dismiss my lecture. Tell the students we'll continue next week," Draco called up the stairs. When he reached Potter's ward, he saw Potter lying in bed, eyes half closed. "What's going on?" Potter slurred. Sighing heavily, Draco sat and felt Potter's pulse on his wrist. "Hush now. You're upset, but will feel better soon. Try to sleep if you can." Draco took off Potter's spectacles and put them on the bedside table, and he saw Potter's eyes drift shut and his breathing even out. There was a crease on Potter's forehead that he brushed away with a soft kiss. There. Gone. He sat for some time watching him, head aura, disarmed and alone. The room was messy, but Draco didn't know any household charms to put it to rights. Since he'd cancelled the last 20 minutes of the seminar, nobody expected him anywhere. Resting his chin on one hand, he closed his eyes and fought desperately against the pull of sleep, lulled by Harry's gentle breathing. It was no use. He must get to work, else he'd sleep through all his afternoon appointments. He pressed his lips to Potter's forehead again for good measure, and went back upstairs. "What's something you wished everyone knew?" Potter sliced the jam scone in half with surgical precision and handed Draco his portion. Draco looked out over the sun setting behind the blocks of flats and rubbed his sock garters. It had been a long day and his feet ached. "IE stands for id est, or that is," Draco said, after he'd finished his half scone. "EG is sought for exempli gratia, or for the sake of example.
You can easily remember them by thinking of in essence or example given. But the trainees confuse them all the time.
I didn't know that, Potter said through a mouthful of scone.
Colour me surprised. You?
Potter's throat bobbed as he swallowed his bite and he considered what to say. There is life after death.
Draco nodded.
Hermione said you'd died.
I did, Potter whispered, frowning at the ground. I think about it a lot. I suppose you often see death.
Yeah, he said. You get desensitised after the 50th quarterly unexplained mortality review and the 70th avoidable deaths report.
Potter's knee bumped into his, and Draco's entire body tingled. He was aware of eyes roaming his body. Had he heard Draco's sharp intake of breath? Then Potter was saying, Draco.
Potter chewed his lip, rested his head against the back wall of the bench, lolling it sideways so their faces were quite close. There was a swooping feeling in his stomach, as though he had missed a step going downstairs.
That wasn't a question, Draco murmured.
I can't think of any more, he said, except. He didn't think he wanted to know, shouldn't encourage Harry. It would surely ruin Draco, ruin them both. Is it a question I want to answer?
I hope so.
Potter's hand hovered in the air for a moment before settling back on his own thigh.
It's getting late. We should probably head back in.
The lie was feeble. They often stayed out much later.
Draco stood up on wobbly legs, his mind buzzing. The air felt heavy around him like a shroud, and he levitated the plate and knife so they bobbed alongside them.
Potter stopped him beside the cast iron gate, eyes burning, and said, There's something else.
I'm all ears, he drawled, sounding far more in control of the situation than he truly was.
I want you to promise to always be honest with me.
Draco advanced towards him, crowding Harry against the brick wall beside the gate. His gaze flitted back and forth between both eyes, which were bright with lively spirit, and Draco leant into his ear to say,
That, Harry, is a dangerous ask.
Harry held him where he stood. Draco could feel the quickening of breath against his neck, as though Harry were prey and Draco predator, and grazing Potter's earlobe with his teeth was so easy. Harry gasped and clutched at Draco's biceps.
Have we ever...
You know.
You will have to be more specific,
Draco purred.
Have we kissed?
Draco pulled away from Potter's ear to look down at his lips. They're mouth-watering. He shook his head slightly.
You're positive we've not done this before?
Harry breathed against his mouth.
They were so close he could count Harry's eyelashes. Harry ran his fingers through Draco's hair.
Draco swallowed a sigh.
You are appealing, Draco admitted, in the dark, if I stood on my head.
His heart did unnamed things at the sound of Harry's throaty laugh. But, Draco continued,
to answer your question...
Harry's face turned serious.
This is our first.
Draco pressed Harry's body against the wall, as though he were made of glass, and touched their lips together. His brain seemed to have been stunned. Wand, plate and knife clattered to the ground, and Draco shivered at the fingers tracing feather-like patterns on the back of Draco's neck, across his cheeks, before Harry pulled him flush against his body. Heat pooled at the base of his stomach, and goosebumps erupted down his arms. Harry pulled away to taste the skin under Draco's jaw, and he was so gentle, and Draco couldn't string together one single coherent thought. Round and round his mind chanted, Harry Potter is kissing me, Harry Potter is kissing me, and all Draco could do was surrender, grasp Harry's chest and sides and back through his thin jumper. He couldn't bear not kissing Harry anymore, so Draco pressed their lips together again, and the motions of Harry's mouth were simple. Considered. Exquisite. Then Draco arrived at the rapid realisation that he was awfully aroused. Perhaps Potter felt it too, for he started kissing with a hungry greed, one hand gripping Draco's arse and the other pulling Draco's hair, and their bodies pressed together like a reflex, an instinct, a roaring need. Like a burst dam, Potter used his entire body, hands scrabbling down the back of Draco's robes, feet stretched up onto tiptoes, tongue breaching into his mouth, neck pressing their heads together. Draco groaned, an aching hole within his chest filled. He pinned Harry's wrists above his head,
anything, anything, to gain some control over the situation. He wanted to take Harry inside him, pin him down, climb on top of him and ride him. He wanted to feel Harry arch up within him, thrusting slowly and steadily until Draco came on his cock, moaning his name into his mouth, and he would make Potter come as well, panting and babbling and raising the pitch of his voice as he broke with desire and need. They parted for air, gasping, foreheads pressed together. "You're cold," Draco said, pulling off his cloak. "No, I'm fine." Draco flung his cloak over Potter's shoulders and rolled his eyes. Harry said, "Ooh, lovely," as Draco pulled up the hood. The inside was patterned with sparrows and songbirds. Draco pulled Harry towards him, who pushed him backwards, and they ended up back on the bench in a tangle of limbs. Then Potter was learning Draco's face with his kisses. On the street below, a Muggle emergency vehicle whined past, and there was a flash of distant music from a motor car. But Draco could only hear panted hot breath against his face. Harry planted sloppy kisses up the column of Draco's neck, and he groaned. It had been so long. "Harry." "Hmm? We can't," Draco said. "This is wrong." "Is it?" Harry said, nipping and sucking his neck. Draco rested his hands on Harry's marvellous arse and said, "Stop doing that. I can't think straight." He stopped and stared. "You clearly haven't had any for a long time, and you're seducing the first person on legs that you've the sexiest legs I've ever seen. I think I might be gay." Draco scowled. "What's that supposed to mean?" Harry shifted his hips. "This is what I mean. You're clearly not gay. I shan't be your experiment." "I'm Dracosexual, then." He sucked Draco's earlobe into his mouth. Draco hissed in a breath. "Merlin," he murmured, "what is it that you want?" "I don't know." Harry squinted, cocked his head to the side and said, "Something involving you, if you'll let me." Potter traced the edges of Draco's lips with a fingertip. "Do you like me back?" "Like you?" Draco asked, disbelievingly. "You're intolerable, and I've discovered the only way to shut you up. Stop your endless questions." Draco clung to him, pulled Harry's face down by his chin, unable to get enough. Potter kissed tenderly, carefully, as though he were trying to tell Draco something without words. "We can't," Draco whispered. "I'm your healer. Rules were made to be broken." "That's the stupidest thing you've ever said. And that's saying something." He scratched his fingertips at the hair behind Potter's ears, and he leant into it like a touch-starved cat. "And it's not just rules," Draco continued. "You've had a head injury. What if you remember this but forget flirting with me and begging me to kiss you?" he asked, an eyebrow raised. "Begging?" Potter spluttered. With no warning, he put his palm on Draco's crotch. Potter pursed his lips. "You seem eager enough." Draco buried his face in Potter's neck and breathed in deeply. He smelt perfect. "What do you want?" Harry asked. "How nice of you to ask," Draco replied. "What I want." He took a moment to stroke his fingers over Harry's hair. "I want you to be fit and well, and discharge you home. I then want to lock you in a room for 24 hours where you can shag me senseless. That's what I want." Harry nodded as though this were reasonable or possible. "I didn't know you were bi." "Imagine that," Draco said, scrunching up his nose. "My appreciation for both sexes is not my defining personality trait. I suppose you think I ought to go up to people and say, 'Hello, I am Draco Malfoy and I'm a raging bisexual. I like to have my bread buttered on both sides.'" He grabbed Harry's arse. "This is not brotherly sentiment." Harry smiled as though he'd caught the snitch. "You're funny. I like you." "No, you don't. You're prickly on the outside, but on the inside you're soft." "I assure you, I am not," Draco said with a single shake of his head. "Like a pineapple." Draco laughed. Potter snuck his hand up Draco's sleeve so it rested on his dark mark and traced circles around the edge. It tickled a little. It seemed so natural for Potter to be touching him that it took a while for Draco to pull back his arm with a hiss. "What the hell are you doing?" He shook his sleeve down. "What's wrong?" "That's private." "If you say so." Potter rubbed circles into the palm of Draco's hand instead. "Why did you become a Death Eater?" "Sounded like a good idea at the time." Harry frowned. "Your past is a part of who you are. Do you hate me because I had Voldemort in my head?" Draco flinched. "Do not say his name,"
We're not all foolhardy Gryffindors, though I can see why you'd be confused. I'm acting like one right now, making stupid decisions. Will you even remember this? I'll write it down. Do not write it down. I'll write it down in code. Draco huffed. But first, kiss me again, Harry commanded. He did. He did.
Chapter 20. Willful Fire Raising. The day after that blissful evening, Potter was guarded and quiet. Draco neither brought him to the roof nor had their game of 20 million questions. Things were uneasy between them, so Draco armed himself with the excuse that he was too busy for legitimacy. But Harry never asked. On the third day, things were still weird between them. Draco did a cognitive assessment in the late afternoon, and as he turned to leave, Potter caught him by the elbow and asked if they'd ever kissed. This time, his body knew what to do. He backed Potter against the wall, grey eyes locked on the wide and wild green. Draco's fingertips sunk into Potter's shoulders. His lips pressed together in a thin line, and he spat, "Is this a test?" "What?" Draco looked between his eyes and nodded. "You don't remember," he hissed into Harry's ear, "but you will." He gripped Harry's hair and pulled it to expose his neck. "How could you forget this?" he asked, running his teeth lightly down the bared throat. Harry gasped, shoved him away, and there was a gleam in his eyes. There was more of Harry, a spirited recognition, and Harry slammed Draco's shoulders against the wall and pushed his leg between Draco's thighs. "We have," Harry moaned into his neck. "Draco." Draco permitted Potter to snog him senseless for a time, before they melted, and Harry kissed his way to Draco's cheek, on a path down to his pointy chin. "I thought it was a dream," Harry whispered, "but I hoped it wasn't. Tell me about it." Harry locked the door and tugged him onto the bed, and they sat cross-legged opposite each other, Harry rubbing his thumbs into Draco's palms. "We were on the roof," Draco nodded. "Yeah, we were." Potter bit his lip. "It's a bit hazy. I don't remember what we were talking about. I just remember how I felt. I got the impression that you cared about me, and that you were a good kisser." Harry pushed his fingers through Draco's hair and inched nearer. "And now I want a third kiss." "We shouldn't," Draco said, eyes on parted lips, shaking his head. "Anyone could knock." "Okay," he replied. "Take me outside then." The next week wasn't any easier. Draco had 2 days off in a row, and on his return, his Harry had slipped away from him. They were up on the roof again. Harry must have seen something in his eyes, though Draco had been trying to act normal, for he asked with wild eyes, "Why should I trust you?" He gripped the front of Draco's robes. Whether to pull or push him away, Draco didn't know. "Because I know you," Draco snarled. He allowed Draco to back him against the wall. "I know how you like it when I pin you against this wall, and I kiss you slowly, again and again, until you complain that you can't bear it any longer." He was so close he could feel Potter's breath against his lips. Potter's eyes were wide yet fearless. "You're telling the truth," he stated. And because Potter was so irresistible, Draco sighed in exasperation and gave him one of those near-promised slow kisses, drinking down Potter's appreciative little grunts. "You may not remember me," Draco said against his lips, voice low, "but your body does." He kissed Harry's sharp jaw, cheekbone, the jut of his wrist. "You will remember this," Draco said. "You will remember us." "I will," Harry vowed, a promise he could not keep. "You will." "He must." "Draco." "Hmm?" He pulled him onto the bench, and Harry curled up with his head in Draco's lap. "I don't think I'm getting any better," Harry confessed. "You are." "I'm scared." Draco didn't have to be legitimate to know that. He could tell from the lost look in Harry's eyes. "You'll be all right." He stroked Harry's hair, and his eyes closed in appreciation. "You always are." They sat quietly for a while. Then Draco listened to Harry prattle on about his cousin's enterprise with computers. Muggles came up with the most unbelievable things. Then Harry blurted, "We could take the train."
to France.
What are you talking about?
The Eurostar. All the Muggles use it. Draco stopped stroking his hair to gape at him.
Have you forgotten about the little thing called the Channel?
The train goes from London, under the Channel, straight to Paris. Only takes 2.5 hours.
It cannot be safe to go under the sea, Draco said, shaking his head. And without magic! Preposterous! Where would the steam go?
Harry looked up at Draco blearily, his spectacles lost.
Modern trains don't use steam.
It's safe. Millions of people use it. It's dead handy when the aeroplanes can't fly because there's bad weather.
Now, aeroplanes I don't understand. How do they stay up?
Draco asked, gesturing to the sky.
What about those Muggle Death Eaters who ride about in planes killing people?
Harry laughed. Terrorists? How the hell do you know about those?
I am up to date in world affairs, Potter, he said with a sniff. I'm no more likely to ride in a flying box in the sky than I am to go under the sea.
Draco stopped stroking Harry's hair to gesticulate, but Harry caught his hand and replaced it on his head.
It leaves from the station next to King's Cross, Harry explained. So loads of magic people use it.
Easier than human transfiguration, cheaper than an international port key.
You come up with the craziest things. How do you remember this? Have you been?
Harry frowned.
I think I must have.
He nodded towards the sky.
With what?
In Marylebone?
I think so.
Just imagine. A couple of miles away is St. Pancras. Probably just a 40-minute walk. He placed his palm on Draco's chest and snuggled his nose into Draco's stomach. Then it's 2.5 hours, he mumbled into Draco's robes. Could be in Paris by nightfall. In between Potter's mad antics, lots of snogging, countless clinics, treading neck-deep in correspondence and several night shifts, Draco re-reviewed Potter's notes for the court hearing. The healing records were transparent, so at most he could be generous with the truth. Potter's outbursts were few, his mind was calm, but he was still a teenager in the mornings and wouldn't be fit for discharge for many months. And yet the wardship hearing loomed like a weight around his neck. Potter felt it too, had written how he felt about it in his notebook, and Hermione regularly visited with a pinched expression on her face. Time seemed to speed up. All of a sudden, just 5 days remained before the hearing. It had defined the past 6 weeks like a shadow over their heads. Draco was the duty healer today, and Dragonpox was still on the second floor, so he hadn't immediately gone upstairs, and instead peeled off his overrobes to incinerate them and sat under the cascading waters of the shower. His eyes ached, and he tried to avoid thinking about the court case. He felt as though a golf ball was stuck in his throat. After a while, he scrubbed his skin pink, put on some robes, styled his hair, and was just trying to guess how fast he could get his admin done when Sally Ann met him on the stairs.
Draco, there you are, Sal said.
He hadn't seen her since she was guarding Potter's ward.
What is it? You'd better come quickly.
He followed her up to the 7th floor to find Anne weeping at her desk, comforted by Sean and Roz.
What on earth is the matter? He asked.
It's your office, Sal explained. There's been a fire. Draco's stomach dropped like a stone, and he strode down the length of the floor to inspect the damage. The stench of smoke grew stronger as he approached.
Shit.
The room was entirely black, gutted of almost everything. A silver candelabra had melted into a pool. His hat stand was a charred pile, his desk a pile of ash.
We think the flue powder exploded, making the fire worse, Sal said.
Who did this? Draco asked. His notice board was gone.
Nobody saw. I'm just writing up the report now, Sal said. Do you think they wanted anything specific?
The security was abysmal.
Burglars don't burn offices, he waved his hand. And look, there isn't anything left. The insurers will want an inventory. Hang the insurers. Get Anne to try to remember what admin she put in here, so the patients don't come to harm. I think there were 8 prescription requests. Or 9.
Thank Merlin he'd submitted both the quarterly unexplained mortality review and the audit report to Mr. Crocus. As soon as he realised, though, it was like being hit by a bludger. The wardship hearing notes were gone, along with Potter's healing records.
Aside from the photo of Scorpius and Al, the desk, chair, blackened cabinets were all hospital property. He could rebuy the books, parrot quills, cigarettes and his dictaquil. Everything was replaceable except his work.
He couldn't bear the smell and sight of the empty room, and went back out to the main office and collapsed into someone's chair, head in his hands.
Draco?
Anne blew her nose on a handkerchief. What's the time? He mumbled into his hands.
5:30, sir. I'm so sorry I didn't get there sooner.
Please be quiet. Write down all the correspondence you can recall. He rubbed his face, still not looking at her. We'll deal with it in the morning. Nobody spoke. Anne stared at the carpet with red-rimmed eyes. Clean my office, please, he said to Roz and Sean. Inform Mr. Crocus. Draco got to his feet. He was bone-tired, and this was the icing on the cake. I'm going to drop in on some patients and then go home early. I'm not needed for the investigations, and, he waved towards his office, I have nothing here. I'll see you tomorrow. Anne nodded, not looking at him. It was raining on the roof. Knew the weather was shit, Potter mumbled. No, you didn't. It's always sunny in your ward. Draco closed his eyes and listened to the sounds of the raindrops pattering on the rain-safe charm. His boots were getting wet, but he didn't give a shit. Potter rested his head on Draco's shoulder, and Draco relaxed his head to rest on Harry's. What stuff got burnt? Sentimental things? Do you have money in there, or valuables? Everything is gone, Draco said, drawing shapes on Harry's palm. Only one photograph was irreplaceable. I keep no blackmail material in my office, and I care not for gold. You seem really bummed out, Harry said. I'm fine, he replied. The more he repeated the lie, perhaps the likelier it would come true. With Harry's head on his shoulder, he could pretend he was someone else. Harry twisted around, touched the circles under Draco's eyes. You're a shit liar. I lost a lot of work, probably about 50 hours worth. He groaned. Oh, I just remembered. The business case for a new healer. Nearly finished it. That's 10 hours down the drain. Fuck's sake. I don't want to think about it. I'll just remember more work I've lost. Was anyone hurt? He shook his head. Why would anyone do it? To your office, specifically? Don't know, Draco said, mind still on the business case. Why your office in particular? Were they looking for something? Don't care, Draco said, racking his brain for the names of the patients whose prescriptions were waiting to be signed. Potter put a tentative arm around Draco's shoulder. You work too hard. You need assistance. I have a secretary, Draco countered. Is it normal to work all the time? Does this count as working? Draco said, lips on Potter's ear. He nosed Harry's clean-shaven cheek. No, Potter said, fingers interlinking with Draco's. Not in my book. He smiled into Draco's cheek. Is there anything I can do to make you feel better?
Stop flirting with your healer, you maniac.
Ask me a question, Harry said.
No. Tell me about the postboxes again.
They smiled at each other. They're red. Same colour as the Hogwarts Express, Harry began, tracing the shadows under Draco's eyes. A postman comes round every morning and empties them.
Every morning? On foot?
And then they walk up to every house in Britain with the post. People work all night, Harry said. He frowned. You're cold.
I'm fine.
You aren't, Harry whispered. Draco did not reply. Between recreating his notes for the wardship hearing, writing 24 letters a day, and sniffling apologies, and more legitimacy in kissing, Draco's manager called him in for a meeting.
There's no easy way to say this, Mr. Crocus began, jowls wobbling, so you'd better take a seat.
Draco's gaze snapped up from his boss's quivering neck to concentrate on what was being said, mind half on the wizard downstairs in a healing trance.
Do you remember a patient called Madame Jennings? He asked, polishing his monocle.
Older lady, tall. I believe she died nearly 2 years ago.
Yes, well, the family have decided to take you to court for malpractice. She died quite unexpectedly, you see.
Draco could feel his heart beating in his ears. A portrait looked on in sympathy, shaking her head.
I don't understand. Do you remember anything unusual the day she died?
She seemed stable. I came to work the following morning and was surprised to hear she'd passed on. I'd have to review the healing records. It won't be possible. They're with the legislators as we speak.
Draco looked at his hands and nodded dumbly. He heard the creak of his boss's chair as Mr. Crocus sat back and surveyed him. "What do I need to do?" Draco asked. He wasn't one to shy away from sorting things out. Mr. Crocus got to his feet. "Perhaps you should take a holiday. Wait for us to blow over." Draco did not stand, but he didn't scowl either. He had some self-restraint around the appropriate people. "My unit is exceedingly short-staffed, sir. I had a business case almost prepared. Results, young man, results, not excuses." He waggled a finger imperatively. "Now then, I'm sure this will probably all blow over, but keep your eyes peeled on your in-tray over the coming weeks." "Right, sir. Yes." Draco nodded, mouth dry and made to leave. "And Malfoy?"
"Yes, sir."
"I took a chance in taking someone of your sort on." Mr. Crocus peered down his nose and cuffed him on the shoulder. "Don't let me down."
"Thank you, sir," he said, mouth dry. "I won't."
Draco found his feet, took him to the roof. Nobody could follow him there, and he needed to see the sky. Wulfric heard what had happened and came up to sit in silence and stare at the passing clouds with him for a while. That afternoon, Draco did something he'd rarely done in his 15 years at St. Mungo's. He wrote in sick. Someone else would have to cover. Anne contacted his patients to let him know, and everyone else be damned. His boss had even suggested it, hadn't he? Back at home, someone tapped on the door to Draco's quarters, probably his mother, but he didn't reply. Fully dressed, he crept under the covers of his four-poster bed and slept until 4 in the morning. He might have slept even longer were it not for Blue prodding him in the face. Someone had put a steaming silver jug of hot chocolate on his bedside table whilst he slept. "Stop that," he grouched, scratching the fur behind her ears. "If it's still dark, you don't get to punch me in the face. It's rude." Blue purred and rubbed her cheek against Draco's. "I suppose I have slept for long enough," he told her. "Time to get up, then?" He arrived at work hideously early and did his ward round first thing during breakfast time. He hadn't seen Harry for a while, so dropped in on him at 8. "Malfoy?" Harry didn't back away, which was a start. "Good morning, Mr. Potter. I'm going to ask you some questions." "Who are you?" "My name is Draco Malfoy. I'm your healer. You're not well, etc., etc. Can you tell me today's date?"
"Where's Narcissa?"
Draco looked at the stars encircling the face of his pocket watch. "She'll be here in about half an hour. Please tell me the date and where you think you are."
"Narcissa comes and has breakfast with me. Then I lift weights and go for a run. Then I read. Then she'll sit with me for some more, tell me stories or teach me something. Then I have lunch. Then... I don't... This isn't supposed to happen. You're not supposed to be here."
Draco spoke as he wrote in the healing records. "Mr. Potter was distressed and non-compliant this morning. He will be reviewed again in due course."
"Wait!"
Draco glared at him.
"Are you trying to help me?" Potter asked. "I'm your healer. I see you every afternoon."
Potter rubbed his biceps, his back against the wall, and his spectacles askew. "What the actual fuck?"
"I'll come later," Draco said softly, "after Narcissa's arrived. I didn't mean to change your routine and upset you."
Potter nodded.
"So, she's okay?"
"She's fine."
"You're Draco? My friend?"
He nodded curtly, his jaw tight.
"You'll remember me soon," Draco said. "I promise."
Because he was a fool, he took Harry to the garden again that afternoon.
"You're upset," Harry stated.
Draco supposed he was. He didn't know what to think.
"When things seem unattainable, you just work harder," Draco said. "I've always ascribed that."
Harry pursed his lips.
"Or you could split the work up with friends, you know. Share the burden. Talk about things."
Draco patted his pockets, got out a cigarette and offered one to Harry, who shook his head. Harry put his elbows on his knees, clasped his hands together and stared at a line of ants on the concrete.
"Say something," Harry said gruffly, a little later.
Draco sighed around his cigarette and elbowed Harry in the side.
"It's a nice day," he said, smiling around it.
Harry laughed and then they lapsed into silence.
"I can't stay here," Harry said, shaking his head.
"No, you can't."
"I think they'll fell me at the hearing."
Draco nodded, a lump in his throat. Harry swore.
It wasn't as if he knew that his records were destroyed. I'm sorry your work got burnt. Draco couldn't bear Harry looking at him as though he was someone to be pitied, and went to the railing to stare at the tiny muggles. Harry's footsteps echoed across the ground, and then Draco felt the press of a forehead between his shoulder blades. Harry wrapped his arms around Draco's waist. It made his throat feel thick, something prickled behind his eyes. I don't want to be a healer anymore, Draco confessed. The arms tightened around his middle, and Draco took a few heaving breaths. I don't think I'm cut out for it, Draco continued. You're a fantastic healer. You've lost your memory. You've no idea. I still know you're good at your job. The youngest head of the department in a century. See? I can remember things. Draco hung his head and squeezed his eyes shut. You didn't remember me this morning. I'm sorry. Not your fault. Harry turned him around, ran his fingers through the hair behind Draco's ears, and said, Promise me something. When you quit, which you should, you're cracking up, you'll still visit me. You'll see me again. Because there's not a lot I like about this place. Draco took a shuddering breath. I won't be leaving you here to rot. I'm too self-serving to do that. Nor will I stand by and let them snap your wand. Stating that truth bolstered his sense of purpose. He would not let them take Harry's wand. He was not leaving Harry. No matter what it takes, Draco said. The Hearing. Draco kept his head held high as he strolled through the ministry corridor, a trick that he'd learnt as a boy from watching his father. People sensed his power, and the crowds parted. He arrived early to the courtroom in time to see a small group of the Wizengamot file in. It looked as though they were a subcommittee within the legislation team, and several recognised him and raised a hand as he sat on his usual bench.
I think we're all here, so we'll start early and get this over with, a warlock said, looking around the courtroom.
The senior undersecretary to the minister, Derek Johnson, began.
Wardship hearing of the 24th of May, 2013. We at the Guardianship Committee are all here united in one goal, to help Harry Potter and do what's best for him. But we must also balance what is best for society at large. Safety first. In all matters.
There were a few nods.
We all here at the Ministry have been deeply concerned for Mr. Potter's well-being. Tomorrow it will have been exactly 600 days since he was committed to St. Mungay's Hospital for Magical Maladies and Injuries.
A few people gasped.
Jane Wilkes was sentenced to 5 years in Azkaban for reckless endangerment to human life when she unwittingly injured Mr. Potter in an altercation at the Department of Mysteries. Today we have a brief report from her, and a briefer report from an unspeakable. Also in attendance today is Draco Malfoy, healer in charge of the Mind Department, who has provided a detailed report on Mr. Potter.
When Draco was called up for evidence, the Undersecretary was not pleased.
You did not come dressed for court.
It wasn't a question.
I'm a healer. Our department is short-staffed and time is of the essence. You are Draco Justice Malfoy of Malfoy Manor, Wiltshire?
I am.
Is it true that the healing records were destroyed in a fire this week?
There were some uneasy frowns and furious scribblings.
Yes, but my report was thorough, and I've written a thorough summary of Mr. Potter's stay.
Johnson waved his hand.
Please describe the nature of Mr. Potter's injuries.
Objection! A woman called.
Draco hadn't even opened his mouth.
What is it?
Johnson asked.
Mr. Malfoy has a long-standing animosity with Mr. Potter.
Have you any comment, Mr. Malfoy? He asked.
I'm here in my capacity as a healer. Harry and I have been acquaintances for about 20 years. I bear him no ill will.
Continue, please, Johnson said, looking at his watch. With any luck, we'll be done by lunchtime.
Draco said his piece, recalling his summer lessons as a teenager in speech and elocution. Looking into the stern eyes of the guardianship committee, he could tell that the Malfoy name no longer held sway in the government. They seemed to accept his statements and dismissed him. He wouldn't know the outcome until the committee had made their decision, perhaps days later. They had not informed Harry about his Wizengamot Charter of Rights, and apparently this was legal. What a joke this country was. A couple of weeks later, someone knocked on the door to his chambers late in the afternoon. He'd been lying in listless rest after a night shift and was still awake, drifting and daydreaming and warm. "Come in," Draco called. Mother perched on the side of the bed. "I have bad news," she said, smoothing the bedsheets. Draco had a nasty feeling the committee somehow knew when he'd be off work. "I am sick and tired of bad news. Let us get some fresh air and go out for a ride. I'll tell you on the way." 10 minutes later, they strolled out into the warm June air. "I was sitting with Gilderoy this morning when one of the secretaries came to find me. Anne and Roz seemed well apprised of the situation concerning Harry and were anxious to speak with me in your absence. A committee liaison officer was to visit him in half an hour, to visit him in person, and so I said goodbye to Gilderoy and waited with Harry." Merlin, his mother was slow at getting to the point. "He was making wonderful progress with his calligraphy," she continued, "and listened to me when I said he should be as placid as can be when they came, to give as good an impression as possible." They got changed into their riding robes in separate stalls. "I don't like where this is going," Draco called. "Harry remained calm throughout," she replied. "As I understand it, he thinks you and his little friends have some kind of plan." She saddled Peggy whilst he readied Giles. "He'd be mistaken," Draco said tightly. "Well, you can guess what they said. They're to snap his wand in 4 weeks' time, according to a subsection of the Muggle Protection Act." "As if the Muggles need protecting from us!" "They reminded him about the Statute of Secrecy Act, and apparently it's not all bad news." Draco snorted at this, and she continued, "because one day they might let him live in a convalescent home." "A convalescent home?" They mounted their horses and trotted in the direction of the brook. "It cannot be borne," Draco cried. "We don't even have convalescent homes. It's St. Mungo's or nothing." "They can't be talking about St. Oswald's home for old witches and wizards," she said, shaking her head. "He may be able to appeal. It is unwise to get embroiled, however." Draco scowled. "Since when did we care about the government?" "You are a healer, not a revolutionary. You'd do well to remember that." She squeezed Peggy's flanks and Draco galloped off behind her. When Draco got into work the next morning with Anne's hot chocolate, she glanced at the tarot cards and back to Draco and hid an expression of concern.
"It's good to see you," she said bracingly.
"Good morning." His office was full of new furniture, but absent of all his familiar things. The time dragged as he wouldn't visit Potter until he was himself in the afternoon, and he had a 2-hour meeting to sit through. At lunchtime, Mother fussed over him and made sure he ate a full meal. When he got to Ward 59, Potter was not impressed.
"This is insane. We've got to do something."
"Overthrow the government? Run away?" Draco asked. He'd forgotten his dictaquill upstairs and jabbed at the parchment with such vigour that he poked a hole through the page.
"Yes, escape."
"You cannot escape," Draco said, voice clipped. "This is your lot in life. Deal with it. I'm getting out of here. With or without you, you're forgetting yourself." Draco scowled at the wall. "You're an incompetent child for half the day. Very soon it will be unlawful for you to carry a wand. Think about what you are saying. Use what little brain cells..."
"Yes, but you are the same idiot who played with basilisks and took on hordes of Death Eaters. Except this time, you've no wand."
Draco slammed the notes shut. "I'm going. I have another 14 patients to review." He strode towards the door.
"Wait!"
Draco turned to see Potter's scared eyes. Will you help me? Don't you want to help me?" Potter asked. Draco searched his face.
"I don't know what to do."
Harry's mouth was set in a grim line. "Right, well, football's a game of two halves."
"What?"
"You'll think of something." "I know you will," Potter said. "You always do. And there's always Hermione."
"I don't know if I can help. But if I can..."
Draco turned back towards the door. I need to think things over. You'll come back? Later? Of course. Harry approached him. Draco was surprised that Harry didn't pull him down for a kiss, but just squeezed his hand. I'll see you soon, Draco said. Harry grinned. I know. He immediately went up to his office and on his way through said to Anne, Please don't disturb me for half an hour unless someone's dying. It still smelt faintly of smoke. Draco sat at his brand new desk and stared at the wood grain of the oak-panelled wall for a few minutes. He imagined what things would be like if life were simpler. If they were staffed adequately. If Madame Jennings hadn't died. If his father hadn't been a Death Eater. If Astoria had never died. If Harry was straight and married. If society accepted Draco for his contributions rather than his teenage misdemeanors. Draco was good at falling in love with the wrong people. Quiet, sick, muggle-loving Astoria, who came from a line of women with a blood malediction. Add Harry fucking Potter to the list. What if there had been no such thing as Harry Potter? Where would he be then? The sketch entitled Friend was a talisman in his inner pocket. With little thought, he got out his dictaquil and placed it on a sheaf of new parchment, buried his face in his hands, and dictated a letter. 24th of May, 2013. Dear Mr. Crocus, comma, new paragraph. It is with regret that I am officially tendering my resignation from St. Mungo's Hospital for Magical Maladies and Injuries, effective from today, full stop. My last working day will be in 4 weeks from now. New paragraph. I never envisioned leaving my dream job at such a marvellous place of work. But an opportunity has arisen that I simply have to take advantage of. New paragraph. I cannot say enough good things about my colleagues, the patients I have met over the years of my service, and of course your second to none leadership and guidance over the course of my career to date. New paragraph. It is my hope that we will part on excellent terms, and I thank you for accepting my application for trainee healer after my community service all those years ago. New paragraph. My son was born here. My late wife was treated here. My secretary used to babysit my son. I will be very much saddened to leave behind my second family. That is to say, my dear colleagues whom I depended upon for over a decade. New paragraph. I feel that my replacement has a very bright future indeed, as the hospital moves in exciting directions, particularly under your forward-thinking management. New paragraph. I thoroughly appreciate all the lessons learnt at St. Mungo's and wish you every success in the future. New paragraph. With kind regards. New paragraph. Yours sincerely. New paragraph. Draco Malfoy. Healer in charge. Mind Healing Department. With shaking fists, he folded his arms on the desk and allowed his breaths to come out in heavy gasps, shoulders shaking, as they had not done for many years.